This is Goldstein, tape one, side one. And today's date is February 6th, 2003. Okay, so the questions start out very basic and easy. Okay, what is your name and your age?
Rosa Goldstein, I am 67.
Okay. How many people are in your immediate family?
Do you count your grandchildren too?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
5, 7, 9, 10.
10?
Yeah. Counting my husband, my two sons, their wives, my 5 grandchildren, expecting 2 new ones soon.
Oh, that's great.
That's going to be beautiful. Thank you.
Beautiful, happy family.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thank God.
Mm-hmm. How do you describe the work that you do or what you do?
I really enjoy what I'm doing. I'm a volunteer at the synagogue, and it's always good to be with people. I like to work with people. It's a feeling of fulfillment. You can always find something you have to do you can do.
Mm-hmm.
We cook here for once a month. The synagogue cooks for the homeless, not the homeless, but the people who are housebound.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm part of it, and I feel like I'm accomplishing something. And I'm part of the Cuban Club, where I help to serve when the time comes. And it's interesting because sometimes they ask me to make a Jewish traditional meal.
Ah.
Because we mix Jewish and Cuban together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's happened once or twice, and I enjoy it. It's a good friendly group,
mm-hmm.
both of them.
Good. And so you work here at the synagogue, Beth Shalom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where are you originally from?
Cuba.
Cuba. Which?
Havana, Cuba.
Havana, Cuba.
Old Havana, Cuba. Havana Vieja.
Ah, beautiful.
I lived in the same street that Jose Marti was born. And the street was called First Paula. And I don't know exactly which president changed it for Leonor Perez, which was Marty's mother's name.
Oh.
So everybody knows Leonor Perez.
That's a nice,
yeah.
That's a nice story. When did you come to the United States?
1964, in November 1964.
And what were your reasons for leaving your home country?
Change of political views. Lack of freedom of expression, and we felt like we cannot really develop ourselves or live in a country which is oppressed,
mm-hmm.
and still oppressed.
Right. You had mentioned to me too that that one of the things that happened after the revolution was that people had their businesses confiscated.
There's a lot about that. What happened is that the first year that Fidel was in power, he had offered, and he said that it's going to be a national country. Everybody's going to be the same, there's going to be changes, and he wants to bring in industries and businesses and make a prosperous country, blah, blah, blah. When he came to the United Nations after, he declared himself a communist.
Mm.
And as he came back, we knew, everybody knew that his brother was a communist from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget he was assisted by Che Guevara, which was a non-communist. And also by Celia Sanchez, which is supposed to be his friend, but also was a sympathizer of the socialist movement.
Mm-hmm.
And Vilma Fin, who is the wife of Raul Castro,
mm-hmm.
she was a member of the party, or a sympathizer of the party.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, when he came back and declared that, the first thing he did was nationalize every industry.
Mm-hmm.
And in between, what happened is that the people who had the money, they went and created in Cuba industries because they trust him, they believed in him.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interfaith government, a changing government. There was no questions asked because Batista was very corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
But he spun his regime. And when they brought their industries and they brought technicians from the United States to help and to create new works and banks and so on, once he changed his mind and nationalized everything, the whole thing fell apart. Mm. So most of the people have invested most of their money into those new machineries and new buildings and everything. They had no choice, so they left the country with nothing, most of them. Mm. They had, some of them were lucky enough that before the revolution they had business with people in the United States or Mexico or other countries. And they have some money there, in their banks, in their industries, in the business, all friendships. But the one that didn't, left whatever they had and decided a new life. Mm-hmm. Very depressing for some of them. Mm-hmm. There was also a big, Dali was very interesting because he right away closed the churches. Mm-hmm. He said the priests and the nuns were just preaching against just Catholicism and nothing, and against the East philosophy. Mm-hmm. And a movement was created that the children that went they were going to Catholic schools. So I'm talking about young kids between the age of 8 and maybe 14, 15. Before 8 and 10 and 12 before they go to high school. They will be sent out to the churches here. But it's interesting because the highest, which is the Jewish organization, mm-hmm. in conjunction with the Jewish community, the Catholics and the Jews send out their children mm-hmm. without the parents most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Was it Operation Peter Pan?
Something similar to that.
Okay.
And they flew them out and they brought them to either to churches mm-hmm. or orphanage. I don't know exactly where they took the kids, or homes. And the Jewish people, most of them, since some of them had families here, mm-hmm. they were sent to their families mm-hmm. or to centers till they managed to bring in the parents. Parents would be like 2 or 3 years before they could leave. But it was very sad because you never know if you're going to see your child again.
Right.
If they don't let you out, how do you do? Mm. But it had to be done, and it was done. And that lasted, I think they managed to send out about 4 or 5 airplanes. It's not cheap, mm-hmm. and money, they run out of money, and they couldn't do it anymore. Mm. But the nuns, what happened is nuns and priests were going with the children, plus some of the Jewish educators, mm-hmm. to make sure that the kids were safe and
protect.
They felt, well, that they were safe and they were knowing, they should know where the kids were going.
Right.
I mean, you don't send them on the flight and say, hey, you're in the United States, just go.
Right.
They and I think they were pre-assigned places where they would go so the parents mm-hmm. will know where the children were going to be.
Okay.
And they reunited after, most of them. All of them, I guess.
Where was your point of entry into the country?
New York.
New York. And was there a particular reason why New York, why you chose New York?
When we left Cuba, we couldn't come straight to the United States because my husband, being a physician, they would deny him a visa. I worked at the Israeli embassy in Cuba for years, and we got a letter asking us to go to Israel to study. We needed to be trained extra in Hebrew, and my husband to be trained as a physician because he was the doctor for the embassy.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we went to Israel, and from Israel, the only entry place was New York.
Okay.
We were there for almost 3.5 months.
In Israel?
Yeah, waiting for the visa to the United States. And the reason to come to the United States was mostly because my parents were here already,
mm-hmm.
and my brother, his family, and my husband's family. Mm-hmm. So we felt that we couldn't stay
mm-hmm.
in Israel by ourselves, and I was having a child, so mm-hmm. it was becoming too complicated.
Yes. How were you able to get out and go to Israel?
Well, we got the permit from the government
mm-hmm.
because we're going to study, and there was a letter from the embassy
mm-hmm.
from Israel, inviting us to study there.
Mm-hmm.
And we got the permit for 1 month.
Okay.
You close the door of your home, you give the keys to the landlady, and you say goodbye. So our flight was a Cuban airline that took us first to Gander. Gander is the highest point in Canada.
Oh, okay.
The coldest Ooh. One, too.
Wow.
From Gander, the plane was going to Czechoslovakia. From Czechoslovakia, we went to Paris. And from Paris, we went to Israel.
Wow.
So it was a long trip.
You took the long way.
with no cent. We didn't have one penny to our name, mm-hmm. not even 1 cent. Mm-hmm. So we were hungry, mm-hmm. and it's interesting because when we went to Czechoslovakia, in Gander, they gave us like water, and I think they gave us like some rolls or something, mm-hmm. I don't recall. But in Czechoslovakia, since I was pregnant, my husband asked the guy if he could give me like a few drops of milk because I had a lot of heartburn. And he says, you're coming from Cuba? And he said, yes. He says, you have no money, you don't get a thing. I'm serious.
Wow.
So what happened, and we didn't eat, of course. And the plane, I have to tell you, the meals on those Cuban planes are not caviar.
Right.
or a steak.
Uh-huh.
But we went to Paris. I called my cousin of mine, and she had family in Paris, so we contacted them, and we just asked for a few dollars so we can eat something.
Mm-hmm.
And Ella, and we missed the flight because the flight from Czechoslovakia was delayed.
Okay.
So we went to Paris, the flight to Israel has left already, mm-hmm. and so Ella paid for the hotel that night, and the next morning we left.
Okay. When you were leaving, did you know that you were leaving?
Yes.
For?
Yes.
Okay.
Since my husband was a physician for the Air Force,
mm-hmm.
his situation was becoming a little bit unbearable because at the hospital, my husband was too honest. He had students,
mm-hmm.
and he explained to the students that they were sick people, that if they would have the American penicillin or antibiotic, that patient would be safe and well. He didn't realize that some of his students were writing down all the notes.
Oh.
Notes and conversations. And one day he was called into the auditorium and they read him a whole
transcript.
And that day you said this and that, it means you're, because the people who are against the regime or do not approve of the regime, they're called traitors, gusanos, worms,
mm-hmm.
You name it. And so since they accused him of that, in reality it was becoming a little bit dangerous for him to stay. Because sadly enough, a dentist who was working with my husband at the Air Force, he expressed himself, I mean, he probably had some activities against the regime,
mm-hmm.
and there was not too much jury or questions, and he was sent to the firing squad.
Oh.
He was killed. So we realized that there's no point of going back anywhere or trying to stay too long, or we're going to protect the house, the car. We'll say goodbye.
And he was following his professional oath.
Well, he said, look, this patient is not responding because this is not as strong as it should be. And these people, and it's sad because the first, the worst of all was one of his students who he helped to come into medical school, who he was his tutor privately.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother called the next day and she cried. And she says, please forgive my son. And I have tears in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's sad for a mother knowing that your son is really not following what he should do, is protect the one who is trying to bring you somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he wouldn't be in where he was.
Right.
It wouldn't be because my husband mm-hmm. said to him, I'll help you, I'll teach you, I'll train you, I'll be with you all the way. And then he's the one who turned around and wrote all these little notes.
That's
he
like
and
family.
Other ones. But that is treason.
Yes, that is.
But in that case, there was a lot of sad moments when the children turned against their parents,
mm-hmm.
and the parents were sent to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So, or vice versa, of parents against
mm-hmm.
children. And what do you do? I mean, it's sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad because you hope that you are being protected mm-hmm. by your parents or by your children, and it doesn't work that way.
Trust.
Well, it was not too much.
Yeah. Okay, you answered that. So how long have you been in Philadelphia?
Since 1964 till now,
okay.
which is 2003, which means 38, it's going to be 38 years.
Okay.
39 is going to be, wow.
And you touched on this, but what specifically brought you to Philadelphia?
My brother of blessed memory, he was a psychiatrist. And years before Castro even came to power, he came to be trained at Temple University mm-hmm. with Dr. Rosen mm-hmm. in psychoanalysis. And when the revolution started and he realized that the children in school were being taught, even if it was a private Jewish school, and the TV was constantly singing praises to Russia, to the communism, and putting down the United States mm-hmm. because they are the imperialism mm-hmm. empire, and they're there, and they tried to dominate the world. So my brother wrote to this, to Temple, to this professor, and told him the situation, and he says, come, mm-hmm. come with your family, we'll open. And that was the time that you could live without having, just closing your door. Mm-hmm. He left there, he had a beautiful home, and he has four children. Mm-hmm. So he left Cuba through Jamaica, which was an organization, again, the highest, was taking out people mm-hmm. through Jamaica. They was combined again. It was not just Jews, it was mm-hmm. everybody mm-hmm. who wanted to go, who were allowed to go, mm-hmm. or wanted to go, because some people thought that they're going to come back next morning, and you know, everything is going to change mm-hmm. overnight, because how could the United States, 90 miles away from Cuba, allow a communist government? Mm-hmm. And so that's, and then my parents, when they left Cuba, they came here to mm-hmm. Philadelphia.
Okay.
So where do we go?
Right.
To Philadelphia.
They've set up
cold
a home
and
here.
Snow.
Right. Oh,
yeah. I said to my brother, couldn't you land in Florida, someplace warm? He says, I couldn't.
Los Angeles, someplace.
Yeah, no, I don't know if I like Los Angeles as much. I think it's too big.
Yeah, it has gotten huge. You mentioned Ahias. What does that word mean? Does the word have a meaning? Or is it an acronym?
It's not the highest, I'm sorry. It was the highest, yes. Highest is the initials, but I don't remember the... Excuse me one second. Andrea, hello? She doesn't hear. Andrea?
Yes?
Do you remember the initials, highest goes for what?
Pardon me?
Highest. H-I-A-S.
H-I-A-S?
Yes. It's organization, but I forgot what it stands for. It's like the joint, similar. The joint is more for work.
I don't recall it.
Yeah, I don't recall exactly, but it's it's initials of some sort of organization.
Is it an acronym?
Yes.
H-I-A-S. I'm not familiar with it. It's an acronym, it could be God knows what.
No, I know. So God knows what this is.
I didn't know if it was a Hebrew word or
no,
Spanish.
No. It's initials for, it's like the, there's another group, it's called Joint Distribution Center.
Okay.
But this is the one that used to send food and still sends food to other countries. Like now they're organizing for Argentina and for Venezuela and for Cuba,
Bolivia.
Countries that are underprivileged, and even in the United States, mm-hmm. because we think that there is no poverty here.
Right.
How wrong we are.
There's, especially in a city, in inner Philadelphia.
It's not only about everything, even in New York, anywhere you go here. I mean, people, not everybody is, it's wealthy.
Mm-hmm. True.
Or middle class. It's down a little bit.
Yeah, the whole spectrum.
Yeah.
So where in Philadelphia do you live currently?
I live in the area called Wingate, which is Cheltenham. It's a township of Cheltenham.
Mm-hmm.
And it's across the street, it's Philadelphia, and mm-hmm. on the side of the street is Cheltenham. So.
Okay. Where in Philadelphia have you lived previously?
We lived in North Philadelphia mm-hmm. and on Godfrey.
Okay.
And from there, we moved here.
Okay.
I don't like to move too much.
Godfrey near Fifth Street or?
Oh, no. Godfrey and near Broad Street.
Okay.
It's 3 blocks away. Near the, now it's a dental school.
Near the temple?
No, not dental. It's the temple.
Children's hospital?
No. It's optometry. School of optometry.
Okay.
Oh, gosh, I couldn't remember.
Okay.
The school of optometry is just a few blocks away.
Yeah, it's not that far from here at all. Okay.
I don't like to move around too much. And I moved to this area mostly because my brother was living in this area and because the school system mm-hmm. is excellent.
Okay. How long did you live in the Godfrey area?
About 6 years, 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
No, 8 years. 8 years.
Why did you choose to live there in that neighborhood first?
Because we were looking for an apartment, where to move, and I have my child and my parents, mm-hmm. and I could not afford luxury because I was working, my husband was working. Mm-hmm. Since he was a physician, he had to do the training again in the United States to renew his degree, and he had to go to school, so money was tight. And there was apartments that a few Cubans were living there, and we keep very close. We still are very close friends. So that's one of that's the reason really that I moved there. And one of the women was moving out to the other area, so she, when she knew that I was here, because she was friendly with my brother, she was friendly with me too. But I'm saying she knew that my brother.
She knew them first.
She says, "Look, if my brother said if you ever move, let me know because my sister's coming." She said, "Well, when she comes, let me know." So she moved out and I moved in.
Okay.
So we lived in an apartment with my parents and the child.
How would you describe a typical day for you in Philadelphia?
I always have errands to do because I'm in charge of a lot of things in the house. Not, I'm not talking just about organizing the house, but doing all these errands and shopping and making sure that everything is in order and the payments are made and the telephones are made, phone calls. Then I really volunteer at the synagogue, so I feel comfortable, and that's what I do most of the time. That, like I said, and I like to, I teach Hebrew once a week here, on Sundays to adults. That keeps my Sunday, and I go to services, you know, quite frequently. And that's most of the time, and I keep in touch with my friends. It's not boring because I always find something to do here.
Okay, that's nice. Can you describe a typical day that you remember in your homeland in Cuba?
I could talk a lot about that. There are typical days. If you talk about my childhood, for example, let's go back to there.
Okay.
We live in an apartment, and above me was a girl. She went to Catholic school, and I was going to a Jewish school. But it's interesting because when 3 o'clock came and we came back from the school, both of us, her father was a baker, my father was a baker. So they would have always either bread or crackers for us. We would sit together in her apartment or in ours and do the homework together and talk. She was blonde and beautiful, I remember as today. Sweet family, I think she was an only child. Then that was when I was young, and then of course family affairs, family encounters, family dinners, bless you, family, always be together, and a very relaxed atmosphere. We used to go to the Casa José Martí very frequently. It was open to the public, there was no charge, and we loved it. I used to meet my friends from the area. We used to go out together. I sometimes go to a movie, only the weekend. We were not allowed to go to the movie during the week. Now, homework.
Homework, study.
And helping mom to do the housework because it's a lot for one person to do everything. And she was doing the same thing, but this girl, her name was Maria. Oh, beautiful girl. I like her because she was, you know, we have the backgrounds were very similar in the sense that the parents were interested in her education and they were very quiet, relaxed people. And she was very relaxed. And then we talk about, let's say, adolescence. When you go to high school. I usually did homework with somebody, one of my friends. And she was also a loving person. She lived about 3 blocks away from me. And we always made a point to walk home together, or we always walk together. They usually don't go to school, and even here, no, kids don't like to walk by themselves most of the time.
Right.
Because it's important to talk and to have a communication with other people. We used to do the homework, and then I joined a youth group, a Jewish youth group. There, you become active different ways, because one of the things they used to do is that you have to read books and do reviews of the books in the group. We used to meet Friday nights after dinner and sing and talk, then walk home, and everybody was like in the same area, so was the boys were always escorting the girls, mm-hmm. and make sure that all of them were safe at home, and then they'll go back to their houses. Mm-hmm. And you cannot get home after 11 o'clock at night. That was a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
If you get home after 11, you don't go out anymore.
Lose your privileges.
Yeah, because they will say that you have no business outside.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was one of them, and we have always outing like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts to have,
mm-hmm.
but we had it together.
Mm-hmm.
We have supervisors and educators. Mm-hmm. Both things we learned, survival method,
mm-hmm.
like the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts do. And you create your atmosphere of friends,
mm-hmm.
but you don't abandon the other friends that you have in high school. It doesn't matter. And even today I keep in touch with some of them.
Mm-hmm.
We talk, and it's funny because the beautiful part of that is that if I call one of them now, or they call me, it's like we just finished talking the night before. it's like in your mind you have been talking to that person,
mm-hmm.
and saying, you remember when we went to da da da, and she would say, but you know that, you know, that day, I don't know why you have to do this. You know, it was like continuous friendship,
uh-huh.
which doesn't get interrupted because of distance or time.
Mm.
And then I was working at the age of 15, mm-hmm. 16. I was going to high school, being a member of this organization, but also working part-time,
mm-hmm.
because I felt like I have to do more than I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked the day I left Cuba. In the same position.
Mm-hmm.
First, the work I did at the beginning was not on the embassy because it was a Zionist organization always through the day I left.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I worked as volunteer with no pays, mm-hmm. or what they called after the consulate, because we needed to expose the idea of the State of Israel,
mm-hmm.
to the press.
Okay.
So I worked with the man who had the Jewish newspaper,
mm-hmm.
and we worked together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the sense that I was his secretary,
mm-hmm.
volunteer.
Right.
He's a volunteer too, he was.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I got the position to work at the embassy.
Okay. Wow.
I make it very short because I could go on and on, yeah, and
no,
it would be like...
That sounds, what you described as in your childhood and your adolescence sounds very fulfilling.
It was fulfilling.
Very fulfilling.
Yeah. Yes.
Experience.
And if I'm, especially as a child and as an adolescent and as an adult,
mm-hmm.
like you said before, family was the center,
mm-hmm.
of everything.
Mm-hmm.
There was no week that we would not see. And I lived across from my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said the cross, it means there was a little hallway in between, and the doors usually never closed, only at nighttime,
uh-huh.
or when I was in school.
Uh-huh.
But I was sure that when I came home from school, I knocked at my grandparents' house first to make sure that they were okay, and
mm-hmm.
get their kiss and tell me how beautiful I was.
Oh.
What does grandparents
yeah.
say? Yeah, they never yeah. say, oh my God, look how you look.
They make you feel better than anyone else.
Yes, but the beauty of it, it's interesting, when I started to date,
mm-hmm.
I have to take my... pretenders,
mm-hmm.
to my grandfather and grandmother. For my grandfather, because my grandmother was dead already.
Uh-huh.
And he was the one who said yes or no.
Oh.
Because I guess he had a knowledge. You know, you have sometimes an internal knowledge that it's not taught at school.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say to me, are you going out? Yes. Mm. But when I introduced my husband, I saw his smile. I said, this is it. Not because I didn't like my husband,
uh-huh.
it's just that his approval was so important,
right.
The approval of family,
mm-hmm.
it's important because for some reason parents do have a vision,
mm-hmm.
they know. I said to my kids once, I don't know more because I'm your mother, I know more because I'm older,
mm-hmm.
and the experience is more important than being mommy or daddy,
right.
And I guess that's, they have the experience of seeing how you behave. I can tell you sometimes you see somebody says, this person is so angry always.
Mm.
Because their expression in their faces is tough. It's not a sweet
mm-hmm.
smile.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it in children. Especially you can see that. If you watch people, and I like to watch people, and I love to do that. Oh, yes. Sometimes I go to a casino or something. I don't gamble, but...
Mm-hmm.
And I watch people. I says, my God, this guy, if he loses $5, he's going to kill the machine. You can see, because he started banging the machine, right? Because the way they push the money, it's like, this is going out of style. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yes.
Let me stop the tape and change sides. Interview with Rosa Goldstein, tape one, side two. Okay, I'll move on to the next question. What kind of ties do you maintain with your home country?
I went to visit a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to visit because I wanted to see some of my friends there.
Mm.
And I wanted to visit the cemetery to see the conditions. And I wanted to see the conditions of the country.
Mm-hmm.
We also, when we were there, I went with my family, with my cousin and her children and her grandchildren. We bought a lot of medication, clothing. It's interesting, they don't have any soap.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have toothbrushes.
Aspirin.
We bought that, not aspirin as much, because two of the people who went with us is a physician,
okay.
One of them.
Oh.
So he said, you have to be careful with aspirin because you're better well with the, with the duplicate. So they took the Tylenol for children, but more than that, antibiotics. And what he did was interesting. He called his lab, he and the other, and his father-in-law, and they called the different pharmaceuticals and said, I don't want samples. I want the original ones. I want to make sure that I don't bring in three aspirins and four, antibiotics or cough syrup. I don't want too many cases.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they did. And they called the... You know, for pediatricians, in one of the institutions, they send him soaps for to give out to kids.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they send him cases and cases, and we gave them all out. And we brought a lot of new clothes, shirts for men, and blouses and dresses for women. We bought them. And we visited different places. We walked around the city because we wanted to see. We went to Old Havana, where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad to say that the only area that is being fixed is the area where the tourists go.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly to say that Jose Martí's house, that used to be just his house, and with his little bed where he slept and everything, they're charged now for visiting, not a small amount. And now you can see pictures of Fidel Castro and Che Guevara, like that part of Martí's life, which they were never were, they will never be. And it's difficult, you know, you change a lot. And the grocery they made, the center was used to be a grocery or restaurant, and they made like not a school, like an educational center, so the kids can go there to get educated, quote unquote. The streets themselves are very, they are not, cars are from 1940s, 1950s. There's no new cars, but these people have managed to make this car work. And every street is a garage because they dismantle the car, they bring in the parts from I don't know where, and they fix their cars and they go off to work on it. It's perfect. The reason, one of the reasons I went was that I wanted to visit those places that I knew as a child. And my cousin too, because she came from Europe before the war. But she says, I want to see where my parents are buried. And I wanted to see my grandparents and uncles and aunts and cousins. The reality is that even this cemetery is falling apart because the reason is because there is no material to fix. I went to visit the apartment where I used to live with my parents and my brother. And the people were absolutely adorable. They are very nice. Personality has not changed at all. And I knocked at the door where I lived, and nobody was there. So they opened up the door, of course, where my grandparents were living. And so what you're looking for, and I said, I used to live here, and I said, oh, please come in, let me show you. Do you remember this? I said, of course, it's the same as my apartment, but I think it's across the other side. thought it was funny. He said to me, do you remember the dining room? The dining room is as big as this, not even as this table.
Mm-hmm.
But it was called dining room.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yes. He said, you remember the window you used to have here? Because my grandparents' apartment has an opening, so went down to the patio from the down floor,
mm-hmm.
to the first, he was living the first floor, so the first apartment. And I said, yeah, what happened to it? He said, well, termites ate the wood, so I had to put up a wall. We didn't have enough wood to make up another window. Well, he was cute. He didn't say malignantly, you know,
mm-hmm.
he didn't, it was just like, hey, this is life, that's
mm-hmm.
the way I'm going to be living.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said to me, I said, well, I have my cousin's children was downstairs. He says, come to the balcony. He says, how do you fix it? He said, it was falling apart and we were afraid to go out, so I managed to get some cement.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you, my heart was pounding. I said, this balcony goes down and we go down. I don't want to be buried here. So we took a picture, we run right away.
Uh-huh.
But people on the streets, if they know that you're a foreigner,
mm-hmm.
especially an American, even you speak Spanish, they have the sense the way you're dressed and the sense you know, they don't beg you for money.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking for soap,
mm-hmm.
for toothpaste, for maybe a pair of stockings.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you can give them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot to talk about that. If I don't know if you have any questions related to that. So, but that was the reason is I wanted to,
mm-hmm.
and we went in, like they called it, a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And the mission was really worthwhile.
Okay.
Because we really...
Aside from that, how do you keep in contact with people on the island?
We call them once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I write to them,
mm-hmm.
and through the people in Miami,
okay.
which where they go more often than I do.
Okay.
Because if you don't have family there, there's no sense of going back every year.
Right.
Because by bringing dollars, you're helping the regime more than you help the people.
Mm-hmm.
Because the only way they can survive is by using dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the dollars from the people that come to visit or from their families.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You've touched upon this, but what are the things that you miss most about home, about Cuba?
One of the things that I miss most is the closeness that I used to live with my family,
mm.
friends. You see, we used to live in the same area. Even if you were living like in a little bit more expensive area, you were only half an hour away
mm-hmm.
driving. You always find the center to meet. You will always have a place where you can say, oh, I will meet you, let's say, in the movie. We'll meet you for food. We'll meet you at the club and we'll be together.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of organizations that you could go. As a Jew and as a non-Jew, they have different centers.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go to the ballet, to the opera, to dancing,
mm-hmm.
which was one of the, that's part of it.
Yeah, dancing.
But the closeness to family, like, for example, even if my children were leaving half an hour away, I could get my car and go.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot do that because one is in Boston, I'm here, it's 5 hours drive. My cousins, one's live in Miami, the other one live in New York. It's not anymore that physical contact that we used to have and make it possible. Even though if you have an affair or you have something, we go.
Mm-hmm.
We just came back. We went in
baptisms
1 month, three times.
But
in 1 month, we went 3 times to Florida. One was a family's wedding, there was a family's bat mitzvah,
uh-huh.
and there were friends something.
Uh-huh.
So we don't stay away, and they came to everything we made in
uh-huh.
here. They don't want to come in the winter time. That's difficult. Well, because they're afraid then they get sick.
Yeah.
So they'd rather not come. But this is what I miss the most.
Okay.
The closeness, the friendship, my friends,
mm-hmm.
We used to, it's interesting because, I don't know, in other countries, but
mm-hmm.
in Cuba, when you're young,
mm-hmm.
you stay on the streets and you call your friend who lives on the third floor,
mm-hmm.
Maria, vas a bajar,
uh-huh.
are you coming down, what are you going to do now, hi, I'm waiting for you,
I'm coming, don't rush me, I'm coming, don't rush. And it's fun because the people don't complain. You know, everybody knows it's going to happen. So we're walking in the streets, oh, it's enough, come on, she's coming, don't you know she's coming?
The conversation
starts.
That's
right, it comes like a family thing. It's not anymore a private enterprise between me and my friend.
Right. That's nice. What aspects of your daily life do you feel keep you connected to your culture?
My traditions.
Your Cuban and your Jewish culture.
Oh, both of them?
Yeah, both of them.
Mr. Lieberman? Is Mr. Lieberman here? There's nobody here by that name.
Yes. You want the combination of both of them, or just each separate?
Your Cubanness and your Jewish. I mean, I imagine for you, they're not necessarily separate.
No. And the traditions, the friends that I have here that are Cuban and Jewish and non-Jewish. We talk about everything, about religion. We talk openly. I mean, we're not afraid of saying anything, in the sense that we respect each other very much. That's the key of everything. The food. In fact, it's interesting because just last week, a day like today, I cooked for the employees of the synagogue. I made the Cuban meal. And there were, I mean, and never in that life, you can ask any of the people who were here. I had the black bean soup with white rice, of course. I have picadillo, which is the ground meat. I have chicken fricassee, Cuban style, with the olives and the capers and you name it.
Potatoes.
Yes. And we have the bananas. I didn't fry them. I made them like flambe bananas.
Okay. The platanos, the sweet, or the maduros?
No, you can, for that you can only use really, because what happens is the plantains that they bring to the States, for some reason, the heart, the center, is very hard, very dry. So I use the regular bananas.
Okay.
You put them in the oven with, you mix, I'm going to give a recipe, brown and white sugar. We cook with a lot of wine. I love wine. I mean, I don't want to drink, but I like, because the alcohol evaporates in the cooking. Sherry wine, cinnamon, some margarine, and in the oven. And when it comes out, you can eat them as dessert. You can eat it with the meat. You can eat it with the rice. You can eat them any way you want, but are delicious.
Sounds like I missed that.
And I got some Italian bread that is very similar to the Cuban bread.
Okay.
We have fruit, but that's the way we keep more or less, and most of the Cubans do that. It's the food, the culture, the reading, the talking about the country that you left behind, your families, your everything, your traditions there.
Right.
Reminiscence of the places you went as a child and as an adult, and when you got married, and the Paseo del Prado, which was the place, the Malecón, that people would just walk around. We did that. When I went back to Cuba, one of the things we did is walk Malecón, which is the waterfront. I mean, we started in the National Hotel, and we ended up in Old Havana. It's a couple of miles. I mean, not a couple, it's about 10 miles, 12. We walked all of it because it was so beautiful to watch El Morro, the Morro Castle. And just to watch the people, and they're still the same. There are still lovers there. There are still children playing. People don't change as much, at least there.
Right.
I'm not talking about other countries because I don't know what they do. But I know they are very friendly and they're very receptive of foreigners. They were, even because when my father had to leave Cuba, he cried more than when he left his nation country.
Which was Poland, right?
It was Poland, but the Polish people were not as friendly. And when my father came, and I put my father as an example, but I know most of the population came in with the idea to immigrate to the United States. But there was a quota, they couldn't go. So they started to establish their families in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cubans were not making fun of their accent.
Mm-hmm.
They were peddlers, they were people who were selling things on the streets, they were workers. And they adapted them like, you know, like they could incorporate themselves easily into the community. There was not this, and they lived together, everybody. All kinds of religion, all kinds of backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
There was a group that there's always, like every place else, that considered themselves better than others. So they moved out from the old Havana and they moved to higher areas, I would call them. But that you find in every culture,
right,
in every country, and everywhere. And when I told my father he has to leave because my mother got very sick and I didn't want her to, she got better here.
Mm-hmm.
She needs some surgery. He said to me, I don't want to leave. I said, well, you have no choices. This is the choice you have.
Mm-hmm.
I closed the door of that house, of that apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very miserable for a long time. But as time went by and I was here and mm-hmm. the children were here and the grandchildren, he felt like, he always talked about his friends there,
mm-hmm.
always. There was some sort of connection that you don't break away from.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm sure your parents, even they were born in the United States,
mm-hmm.
because of the background, they mm-hmm. still talk about the backgrounds.
Right.
There's still something there that you don't forget.
Yeah, and they are from a small town.
Yeah, even more.
High school sweethearts. And
that's right.
So they have, yeah.
That's right. I have still friends of mine that I remember used to go out with them, and when we see each other, we laugh because we're all married and we kid each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's like not, we are friends, you know? It's ties that you don't break away from. I mean, you could, but you don't want to.
Don't.
Yeah.
Are there places or events in Philadelphia where you or someone can experience or experiences your native culture or Cuban culture?
The Cuban Club.
Mm-hmm.
They have, once a month they meet there.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, usually they have a lecture of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could have, like last month, this past month in January, is January 28th, Martin was born.
Mm-hmm.
And they always celebrate, and what they do is beautiful too. Mm-hmm. They prepare what they call, besides the program, which is dedicated to Jose Martí,
mm-hmm.
we have a beautiful singer, a woman, the daughter of one of the members, she's Cuban too. She sang,
mm-hmm.
and they spoke about Martí and his philosophy and some of the poems. Then they have Cuban food, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, what they do is they collect, they ask all the members to bring in a gift for a newborn baby. And they call it Canastilla Martiana. That's the tradition from Cuba that I think Batista's wife started,
mm-hmm.
if I'm not mistaken, that a child born that day will receive all these gifts, but it has to be a needy family.
Right.
So what they do is the club itself buys like a playpen,
mm-hmm.
and gets filled with clothing, toys, carriage, whatever you want to bring. Diapers, things that the family will need. And I found out, Nelly called me the
mm-hmm.
other day to tell me that the 16th of February they are giving this bag away to the girl who had the baby born the 28th of January.
Okay.
And it's an idiot. They had, I think this time they have about three candidates
mm-hmm.
that they were expecting at the same time, but she had the baby, so she gets it.
She got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It would be two at the same time, they will have to divide it. But being one only, it's not a day. It's called Canastilla Martiana. It's a beautiful idea. And everybody's happy to bring something. And people bring, everything is in, you know, beautiful packed, and like gift packages,
mm-hmm.
and new from stores, nothing from home. You cannot bring it.
Right.
I mean, you wouldn't even think of it.
Bringing an old, your children's old
things. No. That you can give it to the, any welfare
mm-hmm.
that they could use. I mean, I'm
Donate
talking
it.
About these. When I came, let me tell you, and I don't know if you want to write it down, but don't forget, when I came from Cuba, I came to New York to my cousin's house. I have nothing. The three clothes, change of clothes that I was allowed to take out,
mm-hmm.
my husband, one suit and three shirts, and I had a newborn baby. I mean, I did not have a newborn baby. Baby was going to be born. My cousin has already children, 9 and 11, or 9 and 12, I don't remember. She called her friends and she says, if you know, or if you have a carriage, a portable crib, a clothing, whatever you have mm-hmm. that is in perfect condition, just bring it over.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived on that, and I was very thankful
mm-hmm.
because I would not give something, even for an adult, mm-hmm. I would not give a shirt that it has been mended or has been dirt. If I want to give away, I give away new things,
mm-hmm.
things that they can be repaired, not repaired, I'm sorry, but can be worn right away.
Right.
So I live with that, and it was. I told my cousin, "My God, I can have three couches. I take only one."
You had three choices.
Well, because people were kind, right. You know, they says, "Oh, I have one that you know, my daughter just had a baby, and the baby's already 8 months, doesn't fit." My son was sleeping in a carriage till he was about 4 months old, because I did not have money to buy a bed, and I couldn't put a bed in her house, and I couldn't bring one. Here,
mm-hmm.
when I came, then
mm-hmm.
we bought one. We bought not my brother bought me one. I didn't have money. Which was a cat.
In what ways, if any, do you feel you've moved away from your culture, from your Cuban culture?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I still read the Spanish books. I love mm-hmm. to read them. I still look for them. I still listen to the music, the Spanish music. I buy a lot of the records
mm-hmm.
or tapes or CDs, whatever comes out.
Mm-hmm.
I follow, is there anything going on mm-hmm. in the city? I go.
Mm-hmm.
We went to see Buena Vista Club.
Oh, yes.
Twice already.
Beautiful.
And I think they're coming in the 18th to
so.
One of the theaters. I don't even know where it's located, but I'm going to find out today.
Ibrahim Ferrer and
yes,
some of them.
Yes, yes. And we go to the Cuban Club. I speak to my Cuban friends. No, I will not forsake my culture.
Okay.
No. that would be like, only when I'm senile and I don't know who I am. Then I can tell you that maybe I don't even know who I am anyway. It doesn't matter where I come from.
Well, let me ask you, what about your children? What have you done to maintain with your children?
Okay, it's interesting because my two children at home, mm-hmm. we spoke Spanish and Yiddish, which was my parents' language and mine.
Mm-hmm.
They learned English also in school and on the streets. And today, my two sons speak Spanish perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Even they're married to American girls,
mm-hmm.
the wives know that when they get together, they're going to be speaking Spanish. And in fact, my youngest son,
mm-hmm.
who has a daughter and expecting another child, they insist of me to talk to the child in Spanish. And
okay.
when she hires somebody to help her out,
mm-hmm.
it has to be some more Spanish background. Because
mm-hmm.
she said, I don't want my child to lose what my father has. And she herself have learned Spanish. My oldest one, she's trying, but she says, you know, I forget. I says, because my son talks to you in English, that's
mm-hmm.
why. But when she listens, when she's there, and they don't get upset because we speak Spanish. It's a natural, it comes
mm-hmm.
in like a natural, it's not like they're pretending.
Right.
So everybody says, what, if they were born here, your sons? I said, yes. But they know grammar, they write perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And my youngest son, who is a pediatric surgeon in Boston, he is always called to talk to the parents when surgery comes for Latin kids, because he explains them with a very good Spanish
mm-hmm.
the situation, the sadness or the happiness
mm-hmm.
of the surgery. And they said that for them it's like they don't let him go. In fact, he trained at the Hospital Mass General. And they told him, then he went for 2 years to do more training in New York. They said, well, when you finish the 2 years, you're coming back to us. And he said, well, we'll see, because if I get a contract, they says there is no questions asked. So before he finished, they already sent him a contract to make sure that he signed up with them.
Name your price, in a way.
Yes, yeah, I mean, there was no questions asked because of, and I think, beside that, he's very good,
mm-hmm.
not because of my son, but he's very good. And he's very patient with kids. He loves kids since he was born, I think. The language helps a lot.
Okay.
And I feel like the United States, these people who criticize because they want to, some of the schools want to become bilingual,
mm-hmm.
and they criticize it, I think they're wrong.
Right.
I don't care which language you learn, but learning another language but English.
Mm-hmm.
The world doesn't start and ends here.
Right.
Wherever you go, if you know Spanish, which has a background in Latin, If you travel to Italy, mm-hmm. you understand. You may not be able to speak as well, mm-hmm. but they will understand if you say you want bread.
Mm-hmm.
Because pan, and in that, and in French it's pane,
mm-hmm.
and in Italian it's pane, or whatever they call that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you say one piece of bread, this is, oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
si. Yeah. So, no, I don't, my kids know, and because they know about Spanish food,
mm-hmm.
and they love it.
Uh-huh.
Their wife learned how to cook Spanish food.
Oh, nice.
The only one is my oldest daughter-in-law. I said oldest, she's young, but for my oldest son.
Uh-huh.
She said to me that it's your son's birthday. Could you come and cook for him the black bean soup? Because I don't know how to do that. I says, I'll give you instructions. She says, no, please don't.
She needs to learn.
Yeah, but it's, you know, if you want to really do it, mm-hmm. it takes you a long time.
Oh,
you have to soak the beans the night before. Mm-hmm. You have to sort the beans. Then you have to prepare your, you know, the onions and the whole thing,
mm-hmm.
the sofrito.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes about 2.5 hours just to be.
Oh, okay.
All right? But if you buy from a can, it's a different story.
Right.
Well, I don't buy from a can. No. They have it now just in water, so you just have to make the fricassee, the sofrito.
Okay.
Mix it and cook it together for about an hour and a half.
And it comes out nice.
I guess so. Yeah.
I think you've touched upon this. I'll ask you the question. You know, are there concerns that you have about your home country, your friends and family that are still there?
My concern is mostly that they are not free to express themselves. Freedom of speech mm-hmm. is so important. Freedom of movement to go where you want and visit who you want.
Mm-hmm.
Besides being in a way, they cannot buy whatever they want because there is not the money. And the sad part is that in Cuba, the peso, which is the official money, it's not valuable.
Right.
When I was there, and it was, I mean, I'm not the only one, in one corner on the same street, you have what they call the dollar store. It's not the $1 store from here.
Right.
It's the dollar because you buy with dollars.
Oh.
And in the same street, the next corner, it's the peso store. So you can go in and buy with the dollar store everything you want, from perfume to stockings to dresses.
Mm-hmm.
With the peso, there is no perfume, there is no stockings, because still rationed.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy blouses, but if for a blouse you have to pay 23 pesos.
Mm-hmm.
And your salary, even as a physician or an architect, is 80 pesos a month. What did you buy? I was at the hotel and one of the employees told me, you know, when you start talking to them and they realize that you don't sympathize with the government. He said to me, any money I make here in dollars that the people give me as a tip, I use it to buy a steak for my daughter, a pair of shoes, or something for my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Because with the pesos, I have to go to the ration list, mm-hmm. and usually I don't get anything.
Right.
And I went through that, because I was in Cuba when ration started.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, my husband got sick, and I went to buy oranges. I said, please, 3 oranges only I need. And he says, no, you have to, and my book rationed. I haven't taken 1 orange a whole year,
mm-hmm.
but in my book, it did not appear oranges. So I have to walk to the defense committee, the central office, which was about 15 blocks away from my home, and get a letter from them authorizing the store to give me 3 oranges. When I got there, they never got the oranges. And I mean oranges because there was nothing. We didn't get any milk.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get any tea. We didn't get anything. So I said, at least something. And everything was rationed,
mm-hmm.
from sugar down to whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what I'm concerned about them, and if they try to hold themselves. Cubans have a very funny, and I think the world itself.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you can survive bad situations is making fun of yourself. I'm talking about politics and baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were standing in the park, and there were about 10 men standing there, and my cousin's child, who doesn't speak Spanish, said to the mother, says, what is he talking? I says, baseball. He said, what do you mean baseball? There's so much going on. I says, no. problems in the country, they know. Problems that they have, what to eat, what do they know. But it's part of them, so how do you survive? Talking nonsense, talking something that is not really of any significance, but for them it was important to talk, you know, because in Cuba they used to watch the baseball game, the American baseball game. That was...
Ooh. Diversion.
I mean, it's a diversion, yeah. That's right. So are we ready for the second tape?
Second tape.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh.
How are you, okay with time? What is your favorite holiday to observe or celebrate?
Jewish or non-Jewish?
Whichever.
From the Jewish point of view, I like Passover.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a holiday that the whole family gets together. It's a lot of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you stay in the kitchen for 3 days, you have to scrub the kitchen, you have to change all your dishes. I mean, if you're traditional.
Oh, right. For the kosher.
It's a lot of work,
observance.
Yes. I'm observant. I'm kosher observant, so... it's a lot of food, but it's a lot of fun. It's two nights, and first night they usually have family, and the second night they have part of the family because they go to the other part
of the
family.
Of the family.
And then I have friends over that has no family, or they want to come.
Uh-huh.
They want to enjoy food. It's a beautiful service, and that's one of the most, besides birthdays and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But holidays, Passover, and. The non-Jewish ones, I would say, is the way that we celebrate New Year's with this, and the Patriots' dates, like October 10th, Marty's birthday, the memorial for the students, the Siempre Siete, the 7th.